Blog Talk Radio.
Where's the goat?
Never mind the goat. Where's the volume switch? All right. Good evening.
And welcome
to Erie House Old Time Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, and there's someone here with me.
Yep, Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and of course with us we have
the goat.
Yep, that's it. No, yeah, that's all we got is the goat.
Yeah, the other goat couldn't make it. And I'm not commenting on his beard. I mean, goat, like they say in sports, greatest of all time.
Greatest of all time, yes.
Greatest of all time.
Yeah,
Ed Bean.
And what's funny is, I was just chatting with him about 4.5 hours ago, and he was doing pretty good for today, and then he must have got struck down.
Yeah.
So our best to him, so he can be up and around and do his own show live tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. But... yeah, that's unfortunate that once again we'll be garless.
Yep, and it looks like the rest of the gang is here. Ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo, ugga. It's good old Bob and Fogsbane joining us live in the chat.
Yep,
as they're wishing Gar well and a speedy recovery.
Yep, we got to say, we'll be careful what we say because we don't want anyone to get revenge on us, because that's what we're dishing out tonight.
Yeah, and we're getting with even with you, the listeners, by sharing 3 terrific tales.
King of Segways, I bow to the king once again.
I don't know. I was told I'm pretty good at that with work, because I'm on the phone a lot, and people try to get off the track, and I bring them right back on track pretty well.
I
owe it all to Erie House.
I was going to say, do you tell them, look, we got a whole lot of radio here?
Yeah. We got a whole lot of annuities here.
Yep. There you go. Thank you, Pete Puma. Thank you, Pete Puma.
One of my faves, Pete. And that wasn't I did not realize until recently that was not a Mel Blanc voice.
No, that was a Stan Freberg voice. Because Mel's the only one that got credit. Not even June Foray got credit on the Warner Brothers cartoons. You know,
that's a shame because she is awesome.
That's a crime. That's a crime.
It really, really is. And if you like June Foray, and why don't you if you don't? Go back in the archives. We did a whole show on her right when she passed, not too long ago, and we did a nice homage to Ms. Foray.
You know, you keep saying that, but it keeps getting longer and longer, Dale, you know. Not too long ago. It's become, we're heading towards, 6 years? Wow.
Well, the good thing about all of that is
and
we're still alive.
And a whole lot of radio.
We're still alive, so that means it's getting longer and longer.
Yeah, well, yeah. Just like my hair, my fingernails, yeah.
Oh, you don't want to talk about long hair.
That means you're still alive.
You don't want to talk about long hair around me. Yeah.
No. I've never been a big long hair fan. I used to have it really thick. It was really thick, but never really real long.
Oh, yeah, I've always, not always, but most of the time I've been a hippie. There was a time
I'm
I was in
like
sales
that.
And I kept a little more conservative haircut.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure that the National Guard liked that one a lot.
Hey, that's right. Fogsbane points out that 650, and I'm thinking, what is he talking about? Episode 650.
Really?
Of Erie House All Told. I mean, with both Old Time, which we do on Friday nights, and just regular Erie House Radio, which we do on Saturday nights. We do it that way because we try to leave Saturdays for guests. When we do get lucky enough to have some really good guests, and we have had some great ones.
Yes. We have had some
usually great ones. It usually works out for them to join us on Saturdays, and that gives us time to chit-chat with them. So you might get a little less old-timey radio, on Saturdays, but not always. That's how we format it that way. So there you go. A little behind-the-scenes stories of Erie House Radio. Yeah. It'll be Erie House Oldie Timey 310 and Erie House 650 next weekend.
Wow.
On Friday,
I'm feeling so old. I'm feeling really old tonight. Thank you so much, Fugs.
Yep. Yeah, and this is the longest gig I've ever had. I mean, I was a DJ for years, but... What are we,
and
5.5 years or something like that?
January.
We started early
2017.
Yeah, well, geez.
Yeah. January, it'll be... Well, I mean, actually, you started the Erie House before that. And January is when we started the old-time radio to go with it.
Right.
Old-timey.
Right. I was solo for a couple episodes. You started joining me for the talk show. And that was in mid-later 2016. And then 2017, we turned on the switch. We said, that's it. We're doing old-time radio. Dave is savant when it comes to this stuff, old-time radio, and some other topics as well. But it was a perfect time to do it, and it's been a great ride.
There have been so many great stories that we've been able to share. And as you said, you know, when you're hosting movies, you only have so many choices. But we have had so many, and we're even getting to one of the very early ones again tonight with the Hermit's Cave. Ran for about 8 years. But yet there's only about 40 episodes out there of it that survived.
Some of them are in rough shape, too, some of the ones I've heard.
Some of them are, yeah. It's like, the most of the Quiet Please have survived, but the recordings of them are, some of them are just really so rough we can't even really share those. So
yeah,
go in there and I can do a certain amount of cleanup, but not a whole lot. I can't fix everything. Yeah,
there's some things we haven't aired because it just would not be a good listen for you folks. So we try to do the best we can with what we got, and we got a lot. And three of them tonight, Theater 5, Hermit's Cave, and Crises. Where shall we begin?
I don't know. Do we want to finish early or start early as far as the dates of the shows?
Don't make me know, never mind. I know all three of them are going to be enjoyable.
Well, if we want to start and go from latest to earliest, I guess the latest one would be the...
I'm going to guess 3 out of 5.
It would be the Crisis, actually.
Crisis,
most recent.
The one I know least about.
Jim, you know what's funny is, again, this was during, it is such an appropriate thing. You named it the Silver Age of Radio, the 70s. The radio in the 60s kind of disappeared. Of course, the end of the Golden Age ended with the night in September when, in 62, when
right.
Suspense and Johnny Dollar went off the air that same night. And
yeah, that was pretty
they tried
much
a couple
yeah.
things. Theater 5 was one of them they tried to revive. The Shadow tried a 15-minute thing. They did a couple pilot episodes and it never really aired. It ended up on a kids' record later on. But in the 70s, there was a radio drama revival. And with Zero Hour and with Mutual Radio Theater and Sears Radio Theater and
the
Radio
CBS
Mystery
Theater.
Of course,
CBS Radio Mystery Theater, yeah.
Right, and then so, and actually, there was another one called Mystery Theater. It was kind of a radio soap opera, and it had Morgan Fairchild and Mason Adams as regulars in that. And that was like a daily type thing. I just kind of happened onto there and started reading some stuff about it as well. And of course, there were some other regional things like the, and we've got some coming up here. Alien Worlds. We've got some of those coming up. And that was out on the West Coast. Also on the West Coast, especially starting up in Seattle, was where Crisis came in during the 1970s. Jim French, who had been a long time associated with radio and an announcer, and didn't seem to really be involved in old-time radio, But boy, did he have an imagination. Most of the tales out of Crisis came out of his mind, and he wrote most of the stories and directed them as well. His wife, Pat French, was in darn near every one of them. He had to marry her so he wouldn't have to pay her, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, there
that
you go.
That happened. You think of Woody Woodpecker. You know, he had to marry her. So, you know, started off with Mel Blanc doing it, and he left because he was going to get credit, but he had to be exclusive to Warner Brothers at that time for the cartoons. And so Walter Lance said, well, I'm going to marry Grace. So there you go. That's one way to keep your woodpecker. Yeah.
Hey. A family show, Dave. Come on. There you go. Censored by the goat. Censored by the goat.
Yeah, yeah.
What
thanks
he said
a lot,
next
Joel.
Was
I thought
worse.
You were on my side. Thought he was on my side, yeah.
Nah, he's watching out for you, man. Making sure you don't lose control here on Erie House. Well, this one's got a nice title, too, from Crisis.
Yep.
The Art of
as
Getting
we are
Even.
Into if we're into revenge tonight on Erie House, that's an appropriate title.
Yeah, it sounds like it's an instructional. The Fine Art of Getting Even.
A how-to guide. And this is episode number 118, and it is from November 18th of 1976.
The Golden West Radio Network presents Crisis. How often in these weekly dramas we present a tale built around one of the weaknesses in human nature? There's
love
quite a catalog
goats.
Of them from which to choose, but one particular human frailty seems to crop up again and again, just as it does in life. Tonight, we are to meet a gentleman, yes, I use the term advisedly, a gentleman who by education and profession is respected, whose credentials in his field are impeccable. A man who never makes a move or utters a word without first giving it serious and deliberate thought. A planner. A meticulously orderly, dispassionately objective man. A man whose emotions are securely in control. But a man who is thoroughly dedicated to...
revenge. Revenge. It's as simple as that. All of us cherish a secret inner drive, power, position, wealth, etc. Well, I had all those, or all I wanted of them. Since this is confession time, I must admit that nothing I could crave would give me the satisfaction of wreaking revenge on the small-minded, petty thieves who have stolen my property. I have given this a great deal of thought, and I have concluded that only in seeing the guilty parties pay for their perfidy will I ever again know any peace of mind. And so, this is my story, told as fairly and objectively as I can tell it. My name is James Bertelsen. I have been robbed of an inspiration, a complex, highly marketable process invented and perfected solely by myself. It was taken from me legally, so my attorney said. I have no recourse, so my attorney said. But I have, and I intend to exercise it. My recourse is my mind, and the vengeance it will produce.
Tonight's production of Crisis is titled The Art of Getting Even and stars Richard Arnold. Act one in just a minute. And now, Act one of The Art of Getting Even.
I came out of Cornell in the top 5% of my class. I went to Yale for my doctorate. I was accepted by Prentice, Morgan, and Carruthers as an associate in chemical engineering. They're the big Eastern manufacturers of photographic film. 5 years later, they took Virginia and me out to dinner and poured champagne for us and presented me with a contract, which, of course, I signed.
You won't regret this move, Bertelsen, I promise you.
I still can't believe it.
You don't know how hard he's worked, Mr. Morgan.
Oh, yes, I do. We've been watching you, Bert. That's why we decided to offer you a long-term contract with the firm. You're our kind of man.
Our kind of man. Yes. The kind of man who puts in 9 solid hours in the company lab every day, eating lunch out of a brown paper sack, just so he can continue some experiment designed to make more and more money for PM&C. The kind of man who lives, breathes, and sleeps chemistry, so much so that he even has a lab in his basement at home.
Bert, I'm going to bed. Are you coming along soon?
Just a few minutes, Virginia. I can't stop right this second.
It's past midnight. What are you doing down there?
I'm watching a reaction. I'm sorry to be late again, dear. It's just a project you can't turn off in the middle, and it fascinates me. I think I may be onto something.
Is this some assignment for the company?
Assignment? No. In fact, they don't know anything about it. I mean, if it fails, they'll never need to know. But if it succeeds, if it succeeds...
Can you tell me what it is?
It's a new kind of emulsion for movie film. You know the ASA numbers?
I've heard you talk about them.
I think I have a way of coating film stock so that its sensitivity to light is variable over a wide range of speeds.
In plain English.
Well, what I'm trying to come up with is a totally foolproof film that can't be under or overexposed. A film that will automatically compensate for scenes that are too light or too dark, and that will make amateur movie making just that much easier.
That sounds important.
I'll tell you how important it could be, Virginia. It could put us on Easy Street for the rest of our lives. This process is patentable.
Really?
Yes. And don't you think good old Morgan won't pay handsomely for the rights to produce it?
That's wonderful.
Yes, if it really works. But I think it will. And it did. I repeated the process again and again to prove I really had something. And there was no question, none at all. I had developed a means to assure that not a single foot of film need ever again be discarded because of the wrong exposure setting. So I packed up all my data and got an appointment with Mr. Morgan.
Yes, of course I remember you, Bertleby.
Bertelson.
Bertelson, yes. What can I do for you?
I think I can do something for you, Mr. Morgan. Something I've been working on at home.
Oh?
I have perfected a process that will revolutionize home movies.
You don't say.
I've been trying for months to come up with a simple, practical emulsion that will automatically correct itself for under- or overexposed pictures. And I did it. All the data is here in these notebooks.
Sounds interesting. How do you get around the graininess problem if our home movie maker is shooting in darkness?
It's all in the notes.
Fascinating.
I can show you a test I've done. It's a little crude. I had to hand coat some raw film stock with my emulsion. But it'll show you what would happen when my film runs through a camera with any iris setting at all, from a pinhole to wide open.
You have some film there?
Yes, sir.
Well, come on, let's see it. There's a projector next door.
Well, what do you think?
Incredible. Bertelson, you really have stumbled onto something.
Oh, but it wasn't an act of stumbling, Mr. Morgan, no. I developed this process over a long period of experimentation.
Well, yes, that's what I mean.
Then you're interested?
Definitely. My boy, if this proves out in our own lab, and we put it into production, I'll see to it that you receive a nice increase. A nice increase.
No, Mr. Morgan, you don't understand. This is my own work. I'm patenting it. I've already called in a patent attorney and filed the papers, so PM&C will have to purchase the rights to the process from me.
Bertelson, you're forgetting. We have a contract. Didn't you ever read it?
Read it? The contract? Well, yes.
Well, didn't you read the part where it states that any new development or technique you might come up with becomes the property of the company?
I don't remember anything like that.
Well, it's right there, standard clause. It's in the contracts of all of our developmental people.
I don't believe it. I've been working on this for months and months, on my own time, in my own lab.
I said you'd be compensated. We won't let you down, Bertelson.
Well, he was right, of course. There was a clause in my contract that said any work I did, anything I came up with, would become company property. It even said I agreed to forfeit patent rights to the company. And I signed it. I took it to Berman, my lawyer.
Tight as a drum, James. He's right. This is standard procedure in a lot of big companies. You don't have a leg to stand on.
But that's usury. That's completely unfair. This means I couldn't keep the rights to anything I create.
For the life of the contract, another 8 years.
8 years. 8 years to go. Oh, why did I sign a 10-year contract? What if I defy it? Suppose I just go ahead and market the process anyway.
They'd sue the pants off you.
But that's unfair. It isn't right, Berman.
Who said anything about right? Maybe it isn't right, but it's legal. And you signed it.
And that's when it hit me. As I took the elevator down from Berman's office, the idea hit me. I was a prisoner now. I'd been a prisoner for 2 years, ever since I signed that contract. Only I hadn't realized it until now. I couldn't quit. I couldn't protest. All I could do was keep on going to work, week in, week out, for 416 more weeks, not counting vacations and sick leave. I had sold my brain to Prentice, Morgan, and Carruthers. And then another, stronger thought came over me. The swelling, burning desire for revenge. I didn't know right then how I'd do it, but I knew that if I applied myself to the task, I'd come up with something. And it would be diabolical.
Well, now we know what drove James Bertelsen to do what he did. Next, we'll learn what that was and how he did it, right after this message. James Bertelsen, a brilliant chemist, may not be an imposing figure to look at, but his intellect is formidable, and so is his capacity for revenge.
It was strange. As soon as I'd identified the compulsion to get even with Morgan, I became calm again. It was as if I had just been given a new challenge. I approached it as I approached every challenge in my work, coolly, carefully, examining every facet, turning it over in my mind. There was no hurry.
Darling.
What?
What are you thinking about tonight?
Oh, was I thinking?
Of course you were thinking. You're always thinking.
Well, so I was. It's a new challenge, dear.
Down at work?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Bert, I'm so proud of you for not being bitter about the invention. You aren't, are you?
No, not anymore. There are too many other things to think about.
That's right. And they did give you a nice bonus.
They did indeed.
And we're making plenty of money as it is. And just think, no worries about security for 8 long years.
I do think about that, Virginia. I think about it all the time.
I think that's not all he's thinking about.
Yeah, he's thinking about revenge. Getting even.
Yep.
Yep.
It's a weird emotion to me. I have never wanted to get even with anybody. No matter, because it just seems like a waste.
Yeah. Well, it's like holding a grudge. It takes too much energy, and I'd rather be doing something else. You know?
Yeah. Instead of negative stuff, I'd rather focus on good things, fun things, radio things.
You know, it's funny. I understand his plight here because before, when we were independent and the station manager really didn't care. She just liked that I was creating award-winning stuff. Basically, I got it and it was mine. But technically, anything I create for the radio reading service now technically belongs to Goodwill Industries of Akron. Now, my TV show and this is completely independent. It's not done at or around Goodwill. So it's
or
not.
For or but any, yeah.
Right. So that's why since we've been part of Goodwill, I've done very little in the special production phase as I had before. And I save my energies for the TV show stuff and for Erie House.
Well, as you should. As you should.
Yeah.
It's American.
American. And you know, I found on Cracked. You remember the old Cracked magazine?
Yeah, I remember Cracked.
They have a website. And in this, they talk about different ways that some people have gotten even.
Oh,
and here's one story. No, these are stories. That, you know, certainly they're not dirty or anything. It says in elementary school.
Don't bother. No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. No. In elementary school, there was this kid who would constantly make fun of everyone and call us names. Because of this, I got to be responsible for passing a jar in which he would have to put a dime every time he said or did something mean. Thing is, the jar was my idea. The teacher didn't know anything about it. And I walked away with $15 at the end of the year.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Oh my. That's one of them. We'll share some more throughout the night here, but
all right. I have a few from a weird, peculiar friend I used to have. That had ways of getting even with various people and or entities. So we'll have a few few examples. Dave's got some, I've got a few. We'll share those as we go along.
That's right. We got to fill in the void. I mean, without Gar here, we're going to have a hole. So let's
actually work. Damn.
Yeah. Get better, brother Gar. This is too much work here.
Yeah, we're breaking a sweat. I got to wear glasses. I can barely see.
I'm telling you.
I had to stand up once. My. Awful.
Yes.
Without assistance.
Without assistance, yeah. Yeah.
Terrible.
And with a cat clawing your leg at the same time. So.
Yes. He's having trouble with my dog. I can't discuss it. Anyway, Art of Getting Even. Let's wrap this one up from Crisis to see what this crazy guy is going to do.
The keystone of my whole plan, of course, was to do something totally unexpected, something so out of character that nobody would ever suspect me. I had to keep Virginia in the dark, naturally. So when I decided on the course of action, I had to do my research in secret.
Going out again tonight, darling? You never work down in the basement anymore.
Well, I will be, dear. I'll be down at the plant if you need me.
I won't need you, but thanks for telling me. And Bert?
Yes?
I won't call you. You see, I trust you.
Yes, Virginia trusted me. And so did everyone at the plant. The night supervisor was happy to let me into the rooms I needed to visit, the accounting department, and on other evenings, the mail room. Nobody asked any questions. In fact, I was a minor hero around the company. The monthly newsletter identified me as the developer of the new variable speed film process. No-fault film, they called it, and sales of it were snowballing. That's why I visited the accounting department. It wasn't hard to see the sales figures and determine in dollars just how badly the company had cheated me. I reckoned I would be out just over $1 million in royalties the first year alone. That helped me to determine the intensity of the revenge I was planning. The scheme began to grow in complexity, and the more involved it became, the more care I lavished on all the details of it. Part of it was unpleasant. I had to cultivate the relationship with Morgan into a flowering friendship. As sales of no-fault film continued to climb, this became easier to do. I became Morgan's fair-haired boy.
I can't believe you've never played a game of golf, Jimmy.
Well, I've just been too busy.
Well, that's got to stop. Man's no good if he keeps his nose to the grindstone all the time. I hear you've even been coming back and working late at night.
Well, sometimes.
Well, you shouldn't do that. Unless, of course, you're working on another project like the no-fault film.
Well, it's too early to say.
Well, yes, of course. Okay, now here's the fifth tee, and if you don't mind a little advice, I think you're forgetting to keep your head down and the left arm stiff. Now, you go ahead and drive off the tee, and don't worry about the rest of us. Remember, we all have to start learning sometime. Right, Jimmy?
I hated every minute on the golf course with Morgan and his two cronies, but it gave me valuable information I had to have. I learned that Morgan received a monthly delivery of mail that came unopened direct to his desk. Business correspondence stopped at his private secretary, but certain envelopes came through to Morgan personally. I wondered what they were, letters from a secret lover, perhaps. The thought of blackmail flitted through my mind, but I rejected it as being too crude and open. Besides, I wanted more than money from Morgan. It was simple to find out when those personal letters came, and I arranged to be in his outer office one day when they arrived from the mailroom. Miss Vance, his private secretary, had gone to powder her nose, and I took the opportunity to study the mail.
Is there something I can help you with, Mr. Bertelson?
Oh, Miss Vance, how lovely you look. Pink certainly is your color.
Thank you. Did you want to see Mr. Morgan?
Yes, if he's not tied up.
Oh, I think you can go in. He's between appointments.
Fine. Shall I take him his mail?
Oh, all right. Here, just this letter.
Just this one?
That's right. I handle all the rest.
That told me all I needed to know. The letter was from the brokerage house, and inside it was a check, peeking through the little window in the envelope. So far, so good. The plot was tying together like a beanbag. It was time to start spending some nights at home in the basement.
Bert, coming to bed?
In just a few minutes, Virginia.
Working on a new experiment?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I am.
Well, good luck. I'm going to bed.
Sweet dreams, dear. Now, my plans were at their most critical stage. I prepared very carefully, and at 4 in the morning, I was done. That night, I slept like a baby, a deep, dreamless sleep. The next morning, I awoke and suppressed the excitement within me. Virginia suspected nothing. The timing was perfect. Now, in 24 hours, I'd know. It was hard to stay in the lab that day, but it was part of my plan to be plainly preoccupied with chemistry. The next day was even harder. But at 11 o'clock in the morning, I heard the siren, and I knew it had worked. I slipped out of the lab and joined the curious crowd that stood by the elevators. They were all speaking in hushed tones, telling how the rescue unit had rushed in and gone right up to the executive floor, the floor Morgan inhabited. Several minutes later, down came the elevator from the 11th floor. A body lay on the stretcher. The face was deathly pale. The medics hustled out to the street, but I was able to catch a glimpse of that bluish-white face. It wasn't Morgan. It was Miss Vance. Something had gone wrong, but how could it? I was so careful. Well, perhaps it was a coincidence. Maybe Miss Vance had suffered from some natural ailment, whatever the cause. In an hour, we learned the news. She was dead. She was dead. And I had to wait another month and try again for Morgan. The next one simply couldn't fail. It was a day like the day a month earlier, only this time I allowed myself to be closer to the target. I was just leaving the elevator on the 11th floor when a young woman I didn't know, someone from the secretarial pool, came staggering toward me. Her face was white. Her lips were blue and she was gasping for breath. It was quite horrible. What's wrong with you?
Can't breathe. Call a doctor, please.
She fell right at my feet. And 2 seconds later, I saw Morgan, as healthy as you please, storming out of his office to see what was wrong. He ran over to her, tried to revive her. But I knew she'd be dead in under an hour, just like Miss Vance.
Oh, this is terrible.
I know.
Just like Miss Vance.
Don't remind me.
I'd just given her some mail to take downstairs, and I say, that's what I had Miss Vance doing when she... Bertelson, why are you looking at me that way?
Do you know what you've done, Morgan?
What are you talking about?
You... Nothing. Nothing, sir. Well, you know by now, of course, that the trick was in the personal mail Morgan and only Morgan was to handle. First, Miss Vance had done it for him, then this second person. My plan, so carefully conceived, was a total failure. I was so shaken up, I took the rest of the afternoon off and went home. I had Virginia make me a strong cup of tea. I should have known something was up when she handed me the cup with a mysterious little grin.
Here you are, dear.
Thanks.
Notice anything?
No. What?
Your cup. It's your favorite cup.
I thought it was broken.
It was, but I found some glue and I fixed it.
That's fine.
I hope you don't mind my using it.
Using what?
Your glue. I hunted all over the house, and then I found some in this little bottle in your basement lab.
But let me see the bottle.
Here. It's marked glue.
Yes, that's right. It is marked glue. Virginia, please call the doctor.
What? Why, are you sick?
I am going to be very sick. Call the doctor and tell him to bring anything he can to help a man who has ingested some equine encephalitis bacillus.
What are you talking about?
The glue. The glue had a heavy dose of bacillus. It acts on the windpipe. Makes it swell. Closed. You suffocate. All your mucous membranes get inflamed. Can't breathe.
What on earth were you doing with anything like that?
I thought Morgan would lick the return envelopes himself. But he had his secretary do it. Just like him. I might have known.
Oh, my Lord. Bert, what do I tell the doctor? What is that stuff called? Bert, your lips are blue.
No, James Bertelsen did not die of his inadvertently self-inflicted poisons. Because his terrified wife was able to summon the correct medical help in time. But Bertelsen did pay the price for his revenge. And perhaps as he sits in his cell, it gives him enough time to reflect that revenge doesn't really belong to man. According to the Bible, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. James Bertelsen made the mistake of taking over a function that wasn't his to deal with, and accordingly he got dealt with. I'll be back with the names of tonight's players and a glimpse of next week's crisis. The Art of Getting Even starred Richard Arnold as James Bertelsen, with Kay Balser, Steve Hilliard, Susie Seeds, and Rich Germain. Sound was created by Jeff Thompson. Our engineer was Carney Barton. Crisis is produced at Audio Recording, Incorporated in Seattle. This is Jim French, your writer-director, inviting you to be with us again next Thursday at the same time for Crisis.
Hey, that was Mr. French. Buffy and Jody and the whole game.
And Miss Beasley. And Miss Beasley.
Yep, can't forget Miss Beasley.
No. No, I had nightmares over Miss Beasley.
I had different kind of dreams. But I digress. We got more radio. We got more radio coming your way. I just grossed myself.
We do. I think we kind of sort of have a moral here.
Ah, well, then maybe I should scroll my ass down the lane here. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Apologies, big apologies to Gar. Revenge is sweet, and sometimes it's sour. And sometimes revenge pays off, but only in very small bills. There you go. That's all I got.
Hey, you worked on the Martians.
You did, yeah. Maybe it'll work on my morals, I don't know.
All part of the programming.
Okay, got another story from Cracksdale. I got tired of my nephew playing with my collectibles without permission because he would often break them. So I placed a cardboard cutout of Samara from The Ring right where he would see it if he turned on the lights. He turned tail and ran, and to this day has never set foot in my room again.
I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm smart, man.
Yep.
Go ahead.
No, I had one, but I lost it. It will come back to me.
Oh, okay.
A tale of revenge, a true tale of revenge. Okay, here, right. I got one from this crazy friend of mine. He had a whole book on creative ways of getting revenge. And in one instance, he had an altercation. Parking at work with someone. So he waited until winter, and this was a ways back when we had the different kind of keys that you would put in your car door, and we didn't have electronica.
Okay. Didn't have electronics.
I mean,
you
might have had power locks, but you didn't have, you know what I mean.
Right.
You still had to stick a key in there. He took a toothpick and broke it off in the guy's driver's side. And he said, I took great pleasure all winter looking out the window, watching him get in on the passenger side.
Oh.
Oh, I'll have more from him later on. But
okay.
That is a true story, so he said. So this crazy person said. And I believe it of him having certain modes of behavior.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite possible. Yeah. So we
got
more revenge.
You know
coming.
Him.
Yep.
We do. I have another quick story here at a manager's meeting in Miami. An attention-seeking peer of mine kept talking during my presentation, making jokes and mocking my work. That night, at a company dinner, she asked me to help her set up a work email on her cell. While doing so, I noticed that she had Ludacris's What's Your Fantasy in her music collection. I set it as an alarm to go off at 11 a.m., 10 minutes into her presentation the next day. And it rings out, I want you... Lick you from your head to your toes, you know.
Oh, wow.
During the middle
of
her presentation, yeah.
I like it. I like it. That is a good way to get even.
Yep.
Mostly
nobody
harmless.
Got hurt, but embarrassed, but nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the best kind.
Yeah.
Next we got Theater 5 with another vengeful
right.
tale.
Working our way back, on Theater 5, we have a fun tale called The Avenger. And that is episode number 171. And that comes to us from March 29th of 1965.
Theater 5 presents The Avenger.
Good evening. Mr. Capo, my name is John York.
What do you want?
Sir, are you the Dominic Capo who was involved in a car accident last year?
You from the insurance company?
No, I'm not.
Jose! What does he want, Dominic?
What do you want to see me for, mister?
It's about that old woman that you ran over, Mrs. Perry.
So what about her?
I think it might be better if we talk privately.
First, do you say what you want, eh?
Come in, mister. Come in.
Hey, Josephine, shut up. I don't know this man.
Betty, she wants all the neighbors to hear.
All right. All right, go in. Thank you. Well, what do you want?
Mr. Capo, when you killed Mrs. Perry...
What do you mean, killed? My Dominique, he don't kill nobody. The grand jury said it was an accident. That old lady, she run right in front of the car. She don't look out.
Hey, shut up, please, Josephine. I don't got to explain no more to nobody.
The grand jury didn't indict you, Mr. Capo, did it?
No.
No. Well, that's the trouble, you see.
What trouble?
Mrs. Perry doesn't agree with the grand jury.
What do you say?
Mrs. Perry still holds you responsible for her death, sir.
To say that, sir? You talk crazy, mister.
Hey, mister, what do you say your name?
York, John York.
Mr. York. How this old lady can say anything about me? She dead.
Yes, I know.
You feel all right, miss?
I can't blame you for doubting my sanity, Mr. Capel. But I beg you to believe me. I'm in communication with the dead.
Kadich! Dominic, this man, he's out of his mind.
Do you think the Federal Broadcasting Company would hire a crazy man as an electronics engineer, Mrs. Capel?
Hey! How we know you work for them?
Oh, well, here's my employee identification card.
I don't care. Nobody can talk with dead people, not even the old country.
I'm here to prove it to you.
Ah, sure, sure. Hey, mister, you go now, eh? You come back next morning.
Hey, shut up, please, Josephine. You gonna prove you talk with the dead old lady?
I'm afraid I must, Mr. Capo.
What she say, eh?
She wants revenge.
On me?
She's passed sentence on you from the other world. A death sentence.
Oh, mamma mia.
Hey, you got a gun?
No. But I am here to execute you, Mr. Capo. By prayer.
Call the police, Dominic.
Shut up. You gonna pray me to death, eh?
Yes, I must. I suggest, Mr. Capo, that you start your own prayers now.
Oh, sure. Mrs. Old Lady Perry in the sky, you listening? Well, go ahead. Take your revenge.
Ula lawyer, one over. Sumera Kamasento.
What kind of praying you call that, eh?
Speaking in tongues, Mr. Campbell. It's the spirit speaking through me.
Oh, get out of here, you crazy!
Josephine, please. Why you bother a man when he's praying somebody to death, eh? Go ahead, Mr. York. Pray some more.
Cherisha Paiwai.
Cherisha Paiwai.
Buena Yana Termino. Hallelujah. Puterio. Asumilo.
Misericordia.
Dominatus Palaya.
Dominic.
Losando.
Mother.
Senfino.
You pray my Dominic die. He died.
Amen.
Yes?
Mrs. Tashley, my name is John York. I wonder if I could speak to you for a moment, please.
Well, my husband's not home. Come back tonight.
But it's you I want to see.
What about?
It's about your husband's first wife, Suzanne.
Come in. Now, what about Suzanne?
You know, of course, that she killed herself.
Boo-hoo-hoo.
Oh, really, Mrs. Tashley?
Oh, don't really me. The woman was an impossible neurotic. She drove Frank half mad.
Yes, but... Well, you did take him away from her, didn't you?
Oh, that wasn't hard. If I hadn't, some other... Who are you? How do you happen to know so much about my affairs?
I talked to Suzanne last week.
Really? Suzanne killed herself 2 years ago.
Yes, I know.
What is this? Some kind of sick joke?
No, I assure you it's no joke.
Then what's this all about?
I'm afraid, Mrs. Tashler, Suzanne blames you for taking her husband away and driving her to suicide.
Blames? What are you talking about? She's dead. She can't blame anybody.
But she does. And she wants you punished.
Oh, you better see a psychiatrist, my friend. Now get out of here before I scream for the police.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Tashler, but I'm instructed to pray the powers of the other world for your death.
Oh.
Supera, Mokara, Pelusin, Durea,
Sabina,
Police Department, quickly.
Terrasin, Thermosala, Sopendio, Dominatus, Malaya, Sensima.
My name is Mrs. Linda Tashler, 242 South Wyota Boulevard.
Rotunda, Morikai, Enfino.
Can you hear me?
Amen.
What's the matter there? Hello, Mrs. Tashler. Hello. Hello?
I'm very sorry. Mrs. Tashler isn't able to continue her call.
What happened?
Her heart has stopped beating.
Check him out?
Yeah, it's just what he told Mrs. Capo. He's an electronics engineer with Federal Broadcasting, doing experimental work in shortwave radio.
Yeah, we got a nut on our hands, Anderson, a real pistachio.
But how does he do it, Lieutenant?
Voodoo, some kind of witch doctor magic.
It could be something like
Except
that.
Except I don't believe it. Did you ever hear of voodoo killing anybody? Really killing them?
Well, Australian Aborigines are supposed to be able to murder a man by what they call pointing the bone.
How?
Well, medicine man points an animal bone at a victim and chants some kind of mumbo-jumbo death prayer.
And it works?
Yeah, the victim usually gets sick and dies.
But in the name of heaven, why?
Maybe because he's convinced he's doomed if the medicine man says so. Just loses the will to live.
Oh, brother.
Well, anyway, that's what the Australian police...
All right. How could it work here? We're not a bunch of superstitious natives.
Yeah. Well, I wish I knew the answer, Lieutenant.
Well, heaven help us if it's what you think it is, Anderson. This nut will be able to run around knocking off anybody he don't like.
But what can we do about it?
Are you kidding? We're going to get that guy out of circulation fast. That's what we're going to do.
But how?
Arrest him, of course.
On what charge? Praying a man to death? There's no law against that. Lieutenant Ryan, we can't stop that man.
Theater 5, The Avenger.
Yep. Boy, he gets revenge, doesn't he?
Yeah, he don't play around. I mean, this guy's not playing softball here.
And the cool thing, that is Paul McGrath. He was the second, there were only two, but he was the second of the Inner Sanctum hosts. And here he is acting in this Theater 5. Yeah.
I thought so. That voice on it, really familiar.
Oh, yes. Yeah, if he'd have a little bit of a chuckle in there, you'd be able to tell for sure. But this is such a serious role that no chuckle included.
Not this time, but who knows? Who knows? It's a great
Maybe
story.
Say pleasant. Maybe after one of these, he'll say pleasant dreams.
Mm-hmm. Scream. Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
I felt all the air leave the room. No.
Yep.
There we go.
Yep.
Good stories tonight. This is our second one, The Avenger from Theater 5. And who knows, we may have some bonus time for bonus stuff tonight. So extra special treats. We'll be back. Sorry.
/22, /26, and I guess this is York's house.
Hey, Lieutenant, look at this. This whole front door, it's a mirror.
Can you stop admiring yourself and lean on the bell?
There isn't any.
Then knock.
Suppose I crack it. 7 years hard luck. Hey, it opened by itself.
Oh, boy, we got a pistachio, all right.
Good evening, gentlemen. Come in. I've been expecting you.
Lieutenant Ryan, homicide. This is Detective Anderson. You John York?
Yes, I am. Please do come in, gentlemen.
What opened that door, Mr. York?
Oh, it's really a two-way glass, Mr. Anderson. That lets me see who it is from the living room. I just press the button. The door operates electronically.
I see. Very clever.
Oh, it's really quite simple. I'm an electronics engineer.
With an unusual hobby, eh, Mr. York?
Oh, do you mean the death prayer?
I don't mean tiddlywinks.
Are you going to accuse me of murder?
Yeah, you might say that. You did kill Dominic Capo, didn't you?
I was instrumental in his death, yes.
And Mrs. Linda Tashler?
I was also instrumental in her death, Lieutenant.
Any more people you were nice enough to say prayers for?
Why, yes, there were 10 others.
10? What? Mm-hmm.
The coroner might have diagnosed them as cases of simple heart failure. That's how they die, you know.
No, I don't know. I don't know a lot about this crazy business. But, mister, I sure aim to find out.
I'll tell you all that I can, Lieutenant.
You bet you will, Mr. York. Because you're under arrest for murder.
I would like to prevent you from making a fool of yourself, Lieutenant.
Oh, would you now?
Well, you see, I'm perfectly aware that I've committed no legal crime. I haven't used a murder weapon of any kind. The district attorney would have to prove that prayer can actually kill a man. I don't think he can.
Well, you know you did it.
Of course. But if I don't choose to testify, what jury would believe that I can pray a man to death? Do you believe it yourself, Lieutenant?
Well, Anderson, say something.
Mr. York, let's be frank. I don't think Lieutenant Ryan or I have ever come up against anything like this before. We're, I guess stumped is the word.
Well, of course, and I do sympathize, gentlemen.
Did you mean what you said about wanting to help us?
Oh, yes, indeed. I have nothing to hide, Mr. Anderson.
Well, then, would you at least satisfy my curiosity? How are you able to kill people by prayer, Mr. York? And why do you do it?
Well, now, please understand, I have no personal grievance against any of the 12 victims. In fact, I didn't even know them.
Oh, this guy's gone, really gone. Anderson, phone for the wagon. Now, take it easy, Lieutenant.
No, gentlemen, I'm perfectly sane and rational.
Rational? You kill a dozen people you don't even know and you're rational?
Perhaps everything will be clearer if I take you to my laboratory. Would you please follow me, gentlemen?
Don't try anything, York, I warn you.
You see, some years ago, I became interested in trying to establish electronic communication with the other world. If there was another world. I wasn't at all sure at first.
Well, what made you want to try, Mr. York?
Well, it began with the death of my only son, Maximilian. He was only 13. I didn't have very much to live for after that. Oh, I loved his mother, but she died in childbirth. So Maximilian had been pretty much my whole world.
How did he die, Mr. York?
Oh, watch the steps, gentlemen. We were climbing Mount Washington together. Maximilian fell into a crevasse.
Oh, my. Oh, that's terrible.
Yes. The light of the world went out for me, Mr. Anderson. I just couldn't make myself believe that I'd never speak to my son again. What else was there? So I began to devote every spare moment to exploring the possibility of communicating with him again in the other world.
Say, you've got some setup here. That whole wall there? All shortwave equipment?
Yes. Yes, I've been experimenting with wavelengths in the electromagnetic spectrum. I was looking for a new and special ultra-high frequency.
And you found it?
Yes, I did a few months ago. A new XT4 frequency, which gave me two-way communication with the other world.
Hey, another minute and this guy's going to have me believe in this jazz.
Mr. York, did you speak to your son?
No. No, not yet. For some reason, I don't understand. I've only been able to contact a very special group of dead people.
What special group?
People who blame others for their deaths and want revenge. I begged them to find Maximilian for me. They did locate him, but...
But what?
Well, they told me they wouldn't allow me to speak to him until I'd helped them first. Until I was their avenger on Earth. For a dozen of them.
Oh, brother, I've heard of mad scientists before, but this guy tops them all.
I believe you, Mr. York. But, how do the death prayers work?
Well, when I'm sent to a victim's home, I wear a tiny transistor set tuned to the wavelength of my transmitter here. The death prayer really comes from out there, through the relay. I'm rather like a medium being used by them. I speak in tongues, but what the words mean, I haven't the faintest idea.
But how can this possibly kill anyone?
I don't know, gentlemen. I only know that they told me the death prayer has the power to paralyze the heartbeat of its victim.
I see. Well, perhaps through fright?
Oh, come on, Anderson. I've heard enough. Phone for the wagon.
One second, Lieutenant. Mr. York, could you demonstrate that set to us?
Yes. Yes, I can. As a matter of fact, I was about to go to work when you came. I usually wait for 6 o'clock. That's when the signals are sharpest.
This ought to be good.
I'm hoping, gentlemen, that it's going to be a very special broadcast. I've kept my bargain to them. Mrs. Tashler was the 12th. Now they must keep their promise and let me talk to Max Minion. John York here. John York here.
Stand aside, John York. Hello, Lieutenant.
Who are you?
I was Frank Morris.
Frankie Morris is dead.
Why did you kill me, Lieutenant?
Hey. Hey, York. Is this on the level?
Yes, Lieutenant. You are speaking to a dead man.
Why did you have to kill me?
I didn't mean to kill you, Frankie. You ran. I yelled, but you didn't stop.
You knew I was pushing the stuff only because I was hooked. Was that a reason to kill me?
I told you it was an accident. I aimed for your legs.
John York, begin the death prayer.
You do, Buster, and I'll ram my gun down your throat.
He must pay for killing me. John York, the death prayer.
Dead or not, Frankie, don't you threaten the law, you hear?
They don't recognize that law, Lieutenant.
Mr. York, you mustn't.
Don't worry, Mr. Anderson. I have no intention of praying any more people to death.
You're not going to get the chance, York. I'm putting you in the psycho ward.
Listen to me, you people in the other world. I've kept my bargain, avenged a dozen deaths for you. Now keep your promise to me.
There is one more vengeance, John York.
No. No more.
I demand that you let me talk to my son, Maximilian. Please. Please let me hear his voice again.
Father, why did you insist on our climbing Mount Washington? You knew how afraid I was.
I wanted it to be a glorious adventure for us, son. Just the two of us, alone up there, miles above the world.
I would be alive now if you hadn't made me go, Father. You killed me. As surely as if you'd pushed me into that crevice.
No, you mustn't say that, Maximilian.
I must be avenged. I will now pray the powers of my world for your death, Father. Ulaloyo.
No, Mr. York, you mustn't do that. Smash the sad Anderson.
I want to go, Mr. Anderson.
So
I want to be with my son.
Dominata. Orlea.
I'm coming, Maximilian.
Cherissima. Morteo, Rosanda, Morigny, and Fino. Amen.
Presented The Avenger, written by Jules Archer, produced and directed by Warren Somerville. In the cast, Paul McGrath, Bryna Rayburn, Gil Mack, Peter Fernandez, and David Kerman. Audio engineers, Neil Pultz and Marty Folia. Sound technician, Ed Blaney. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastotsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Mr. Lee Bowman.
Thank you, Lee.
invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
It's also an Erie House Radio production. With goats.
Yep. And it's also, well, and the goat, and that's our logo there. And, of course, we have a lesson to learn from this.
Ha! I was ready. Erie House Radio proudly presents another garrulous moral of the story.
Yes, apologies to guard. And as I finished writing this just now, there is no penalty for getting even if you're already dead. Get away.
Except for he who judges us all, the flying spaghetti monster.
Oh, yes.
Never forget. The flying spaghetti monster.
Yep. I forgot. Sorry. Another story from Cracked. Another story of revenge from Cracked. My cousin stayed with us for the weekend and made a big mess of my room. So I took his iPod while he was asleep and replaced the songs on his playlist with Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up, and changed the song titles and artists to match the ones he originally had on his playlist. He was stuck with the one song for his whole long trip back home. Ouch!
That's getting Rickrolled right there. Remember that expression, getting Rickrolled? That's an oldie.
No, I don't remember that one.
Oh, yeah, people would just, they would send you something, they would send you that video of him singing Never Gonna Give You Up under the premise of it being something else, like you would name a file something else, and this was like an early internet gag, like maybe early 2000s, and then if you got burned with it, that means you got Rickrolled. Yeah.
Ah.
That's what the youngins tell me.
The youngins tell you that, do they?
That are not so young anymore.
Yeah. What does that make us?
Old. Old. Just old. There's no other way to say it. There's no other way to say it.
No way around it, yeah.
At least that's how I feel.
Here's another story. So in case you're getting one ready, Dale. My roommate kept snooping around my stuff and rummaging through my drawers just because. So I put a barcode in her handbag, making sure that an alarm went off every time she walked in or out of a store. She went through months of frustration before she figured it out.
Awesome. Same evil friend. Or former friend, really. I don't talk to him anymore, but he had a fallout at a restaurant with the management and or staff of a particular restaurant. So he got himself a nice bag of number two, rubbed it on their air vents, and called the health department to check out this eating establishment. Again, allegedly a true story. Yeah, this guy was...
He sounds a little bit off the end there, Dale.
I don't talk to him much, you know?
But he gave you some great stories.
He just... I don't know. Anywho, we got another story from the Hermit's Cave. We're going way, way back.
Yes.
We had the 60s. We had the 70s. Now we're reaching way back.
To about 19... There's no exact date on this, Dale, because that has not been determined, went through the internet. But I can tell you this did come from the year of 1942.
Ooh, this is Hermit's Cave, Spirit Vengeance.
The Mummers in the Little Theater of the Air.
Mummers! Perfect time for goats!
Now, the hermit is ready.
Ghost stories. Weird stories. And murders, too. The hermit knows of them all. Turn out your lights. Turn them out. You heard the story, Spirit Vengeance, eh? Then listen while the hermit tells you the story.
Still storming. Will it never let up?
Matter of a small electrical storm should not trouble you, Orsa.
Oh, I've had enough of such talk, Rommel.
You see, I talk civilly and you misconstrue my verse, hmm?
Oh, stop it.
Oh. Oh. Draw up your chair closer to the fire. Rosa, my dear. Think on the pleasant things. You'll forget all about the storm outside.
Think on pleasant things? As if I ever could.
Oh.
After all that has happened in this house in the last 3 days.
I'm thankful for the thunder that drowns out your words.
Who is there in this house to hear us? Who is left here but Carter, who's in on your horrible schemes?
My dear, I thought you'd learn to appreciate my experiments before this.
Appreciate the terrible things you and Carter are doing?
Carter's a very clever assistant and servant, my dear. Who desires life more than...
Carter is a fiend, and so are you. Oh, it must be 10 o'clock. Thank heaven.
Why are you thankful for the hour of the night, hmm?
There will be no visitors tonight. No one will be stopping at this house of murder tonight.
Are you sure no one will visit us, hmm?
Then there is someone coming?
No man knows what the next hour may bring.
Rommel?
Do not get upset, my dear. Carter will do the honors. Come in. Yes, Carter?
A gentleman and a lady wait outside in the hall, Professor Santos.
So?
They find themselves confused by the storm.
Confused? You mean deliberately...
Rosa, please. Cato, what you wish to convey to me is that the gentleman and lady have lost their way.
Oh, Ramon, please send them on their way.
Send away specimens? But, my dear, the way you talk, one would think that specimens were easy to get. Huh, Cato?
And these two are good ones.
Then why are you waiting? Show the strangers the kindness of our shelter and hospitality.
Oh, no, Ramon. Oh, Cato.
Show the strangers into the library, Carto.
Yes, Professor Santos. The professor desires that you enter the library. This way, please.
Yeah, this is certainly nice of you. Come, Bella.
Step inside, please.
Good evening, sir. My wife and I...
Now, make no apologies. Carto, you will prepare a room for the visitors?
At once.
Ah. Won't you sit down?
Yeah, thank you. Here, Bella, you take this chair.
Thank you.
You'll pardon me if I do not rise from my chair. You'll perceive that I walk with a cane, and even then with some difficulty.
Please don't go to any bother because of us.
As soon as the storm is over, if you could tell us the way to the next village, we will be on our way. It isn't necessary to prepare a room for us.
No, we'll be on our way.
Surely not in a storm like this.
It's strange country to us. Then we saw the road was closed, and we took the right fork, as we thought the sign said. It brought us right here to your door. The road didn't seem to go any further, Now, if you'll just direct us,
oh,
we...
Oh, but I wouldn't hear of you stepping out again.
But, Bellerin, I hate to be a bother.
Not at all, not at all. Now, are you getting dry, Mr...
Yes, thank you. My name is Richard Kenton, my wife, Bella.
Delighted, Mrs. Kenton, yes, delighted.
Kenton.
That was the name, my dear, Kenton. May I present my wife, Rosa? I am Professor Roman Santos.
How do you do?
How do you do, Mrs. Santos?
How do you do?
Now that introductions are over, may I say that you're welcome here?
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. One hardly expects to find a lovely estate like this hidden away from everything. A refuge for tourists who've lost their way.
Have you come a long ways?
Indeed we have. Nearly 500 miles from home.
Oh, really?
We're really quite upset, too. Our only daughter, Lisa, was married a month ago. She and her husband, Charles, went for a tour of this country for their honeymoon. They persuaded Richard and I to meet them at Minwell. That's the next village.
Yes. Minwell is the next village.
But we haven't heard from them.
I don't understand.
Well, what my wife was trying to say is that we plan to meet Lisa and Charles at Minwell. This morning we wired them to let us know if they are waiting in Minwell.
We received no answer to our wire.
Well, maybe we didn't wait at our hotel long enough to receive an answer.
Well, we hope that's what it is.
No doubt that is what happened. I shouldn't worry. You'll have a good night's rest here, and I wouldn't worry about tomorrow. Now, don't worry at all.
I was anxious to get to Minwell tonight. You know how mothers are. Ever since we left home, I've had a strange presentiment that something was going to happen to Lisa and Charles.
Oh, now, Mother, I'm sure Professor... Professor Santos wouldn't mind if we use his phone to call the hotel in Minwell. Oh,
certainly not.
Thank you. Now, if you'll just show me where...
However, that will be impossible tonight.
But I...
The storm has broken down our outside wires, and I'm afraid my servant Carter will not be able to locate the trouble before morning.
Oh,
but it will soon be morning. You'll soon be in Minwell. You'll soon find that your daughter and your new son are waiting for you quite unharmed.
Of course, Mother. You're unduly alarmed.
I can't help being anxious. You know how it is if you have children.
I am pleased to say we have no children.
Oh?
And you are a professor of philosophy, perhaps?
Medicine.
Well, surely you don't practice. There are so few houses about. You seem to be shut off from the rest of the world.
I devote my time to science.
Well, I should have known from all these books.
Professor Santos experiments with the human heart. The human body.
What?
Oh, Rosa, my dear, you speak very bluntly tonight. It's quite true. I hope someday to find a certain answer to an ageless problem.
You mean that you expect to discover a way to make the heart beat on forever?
Exactly. Quite right.
You rang, Professor Santos?
Yes, Cardo. Will you show Mr. and Mrs. Kenton to their rooms? I'm sure they're very weary.
Oh, we're a lot of bother.
No, not at all. Cardo will serve you tea, hot milk, anything you desire. But I would suggest you don't eat too heavily, as you might not sleep too well. However, just make your wishes known.
Oh, don't get up from your chair, Professor.
I will show my guest to the door. Look out the window. Storm is gone. There's a moon pushing its way through the clouds.
Richard, we could drive on tonight.
Ach, nonsense. In the morning I can show you the beauty of my estate. And now, good night.
Good night, sir.
And may your dreams be pleasant ones. Good night. Cardo, take good care of our guest. Take very good care of them.
You know who those people are? You know who those two are?
Quiet. My hearing is good, Rosa.
The mother and the father.
Yes.
What are you going to do?
I'm very fortunate, don't you think?
You're insane.
Yes, very fortunate. A stroke of luck.
You're mad.
And you are a coward. Furthermore, stop dabbling in my affairs.
Stop. Don't come near me.
The mother, the father, out of the way. There'll be no searching for the other two.
Mad. You grow more mad each hour.
What is it Carter would say? It is easy to convince a wise man, but to reason with a fool is a difficult undertaking. Cato, I was just speaking your name. Cato, what would you say if I were to tell you that the mother and father of the young lady, Lisa, were guests in our household,
I would say, Professor Santos, it is too late to pull the rein when the horse has gained the brink of the precipice.
Oh, good, well spoken.
The time for stopping the leak is past. When the vessel is in the midst of the stream.
Superb, exactly. Nothing should deter us from such wisdom.
Nothing.
Certainly not my good wife, Rosa.
What are you going to do with me?
Do not worry, my dear. Cado, you will escort Rosa to the laboratory.
To the laboratory? No.
Your knife may be of assistance. Rosa, you will follow Cado. At once. At once to the laboratory and await me there.
What's the matter, Bella? Why are you poking around everywhere?
Richard, I have a strange feeling about this place. Somehow I don't like it here.
Don't like it here? Beautiful room like this?
The man and his wife. There's something wrong there. And that Cado gives me the creep.
The professor and his wife are cultured people, Bella. Oh, your nerves are getting the better of you.
I'm worried about Lisa and Charles. They'll be worried about us because we aren't in Linwell tonight.
Oh, they'll have sense enough to know we'd stop along the way in such a storm as we've had tonight. Oh, try and sleep, Bella. We'll be on our way first thing in the morning. Everything is going to be all right. Don't worry, Bella. We'll try and sleep.
Oh.
Mother, it is I, Lisa. Mother, it is I, Lisa, calling to you. Mother, wake up quickly.
Who's that? Did someone call to me? Father?
Huh?
Father, wake up.
What is it?
Did you call to me?
No, I didn't call unless I talked in my sleep.
Well, someone called me. Father, it was Lisa. It was Lisa calling to me.
Oh, Bella, you've been dreaming. Now go back to sleep. It'll soon be morning.
I'm sure now that I heard Lisa calling to me.
Oh, Bella, you were dreaming.
Perhaps I was. Perhaps I was dreaming. Oh, I'm sorry I woke you up.
Oh, please, let's try and get some sleep before morning.
All right, dear. I'm sorry.
Father.
Again.
Father, don't go back to sleep.
No.
He got up so quickly, he tripped over the cord. I had to plug it back in.
Yeah, yank that microphone cord, yeah.
It's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Oh, you think I'm going to admit to being caught up in the story?
There you go. Another story from crack. I had a neighbor who had frequent way too loud parties during which trash was thrown over the fence and into my yard. So I collected all of my trash for the month and shoved it in through his mail slot while he wasn't home.
Ooh.
Wow.
Wow. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Get them while they're not looking.
Yep. Ah, so interesting story going on here. Not a house I'd want to stop at, I think. I think I'd go back out in a storm if it were me.
That guy really wants it to sound like Pete.
Not that I'm a chicken, but...
All righty then. But he's not a chicken. A giant chicken, I tell you.
But I could do this. There you go.
And that's what really matters. If you can do that. Makes my day.
Oh, my.
What would life be without a goat?
Without a goat, it would be a lot quieter. Well, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, there'd be that. But...
And there wouldn't be goat cheese, you know, or
goat cheese,
goat milk, or, or goat milk, or
goat sandwich.
Whatever else goats do besides well, goats, yeah, they eat that poison ivy. Mares eat oats and does eat oats, and little lambs eat poison ivy, something like that.
Yeah, they eat ivy.
Yep.
Ivy was surprised.
I'm sure she was, yeah.
But those goats chewing
wow.
on her, but yeah. We got the Hermit's Cave.
We do.
Spirit Vengeance.
Yeah.
I like this creepy voice.
Somebody,
the creepy voice. The creepy voice almost reminded me of the creepy voice in the very, very first episode we ever played.
Ah, of the
Poltergeist.
The Poltergeist.
Yeah, remember the dead people talk. This voice of this woman. Spirit woman or whatever she is very reminiscent of that.
I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, it is somewhat reminiscent of that.
Yeah.
And you can easily go back to a January 13th? Is it Friday the 13th we did that first Friday night Erie House Radio? Or was that was a Saturday one?
Let me check my schedule. It was actually January 7th of 2017. Lights
okay.
Out Poltergeist. And with God rest his soul, King Charles joined us that day. Remember King Charles? God bless him.
Yeah, Charles, yes, yep.
He's a character.
He's gone on to a better world, Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Or something like that, I don't know.
Yeah, no. Frankly, I'd rather be in Philadelphia.
Here's another one. My sister was being harassed by one of her coworkers, so I used that guy's work email to subscribe him to literally thousands of newsletters and of adult sites. I knew it was his only way of contacting his clients, and he got spammed to death with porn.
Jeez. Was that a bad thing?
Wow.
Wait, no. Maybe
wow.
That's a good thing. I don't know. Not at work.
I mean, I know a few people that, out of a joke, you know, subscribe some people to magazines, but never something like that, no.
Yeah. All right, here's another true story revenge. This one is my own.
Uh-oh.
I worked in the mortgage industry for a while, and I worked with these shady characters. Who had blamed home office for not paying me on like three transactions I had successfully put together. And I was really getting ticked. And I was giving the runaround. But what they didn't know is I had fax numbers to like almost every. Now, keep in mind, this is the late 1990s. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I kind of guessed that was 19. With
I had
fax,
phone
yeah.
numbers to every fax at home office. So I took some black construction paper and made a loop and stuck it in the fax machine and just ran them all out of ink on their side. Just had it continuously feeding black. So they were getting printing page after page of black.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I was ticked off. I was ticked off. Actually, that same crazy person inspired me to do that.
Ah, okay.
Same semi-crazy person.
Learning from the master.
And I say that in a fond way. It was a kind of a fun crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, I think we have like the second half of our tale yet to go.
We do. Spirit Vengeance from Hermit's Cave. We'll wrap it up and come right back with more fun.
Get out of the bed quickly.
Father! Yep. Father! Get up quick!
Oh, what is it now?
Father, hurry.
What in the world?
Do as I say, quick. No, don't turn on the light. Get out
Pulter
there.
Goes.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Here, hide behind this curtain. Here.
Mother, what is this all about?
It's so loud.
Why on earth are we standing behind this curtain in the middle of the night?
I can't tell you. I don't know myself yet.
Shh. Mother, I tell you.
Be still.
Someone walking.
Yes. That man walking with his cane.
Suppose it is he walking down the hall. Why are we hiding behind this curtain?
I can't tell you yet.
Shade the light and hold it higher, Cardell.
They are sleeping.
Yes. Very peacefully. We will make quick work of this. Now over to the other side of the bed, Cardell. The woman will be my patient. And I give you the word, make quick work with a knife.
Ready.
All right.
Now!
Professor Santos!
There's no one in this bed.
But we saw their forms under the bedclothes.
Yes.
With our own eyes we saw them. Only a second ago. Now, there is no one here.
This is impossible.
No one in this bed. We slashed the pillows with our knives.
They've escaped, but how? I saw them in this bed. What's happening?
In this house? Who screamed, eh? The hermit will tell you before the night is done. It is a few seconds later. Ramon Santos and Cardo are standing over the bed where they thought their two victims sleeping. Richard and Bella Canton are hiding behind the heavy window drape in the same room as we hear.
Closer. Cardo, quickly to the laboratory. Hurry, I'll follow.
They've gone.
Yes. Mother, we're in the house of a madman. Get your robe quickly. Don't stop to dress. We've got to get out of here. They came to this room to kill us.
Yes.
How did you know that they were coming?
Lisa called to me. That scream, it was Lisa. She's in this house.
Oh, but she couldn't be.
We've got to follow those two. Find her.
But how could Lisa be here?
Somehow she crept to this room. She warned me to get out of bed, and then she vanished. Hurry. Something terrible has happened to her.
Which way shall we go?
Didn't you hear him say they were going to the laboratory?
Where? Everything's quiet now. Look, here's a stairway. It must lead to the laboratory.
Oh, Lisa and Charles. What have they done to them?
Up the stairs. Hurry.
I don't hear anything in the house now. What have they done to Lisa? Oh, I see a light.
Yes. No need to be quiet now. We've got to have this out.
So, Very convenient. You decided to pay a visit to my laboratory.
Where's our daughter?
Perhaps this is the best way after all.
I said, where is our daughter?
Your daughter? You told me this evening she was in Minwell.
She's here somewhere.
Yes. She came to our room.
Nonsense.
I heard her whisper to me, and then she vanished.
Well. Now we have prestidigitation to add to our entertainment, huh?
Where is Lisa? Where is Charles?
My dear man.
We know that you came to our room to try and kill us. We're not afraid of you or your cargo.
That is interesting.
We heard Lisa scream. What have you done with her?
My dear guest, the screaming came from my wife, Rosa, who now sits over there in that chair, bound and gagged. I assure you, you will hear no more screaming tonight.
We're not going to be put off. Lisa and Charles are in this house.
Father, look. Look. Lisa's purse. That's Lisa's purse lying there on that table.
Yes.
My girl, what have you done with her? That's her purse. She's in this house. I heard her whisper to me. What have you done with her?
Cato, we've had enough of this hysterical scene. We shall end this cross-examination now.
At your orders, Professor Santos.
Now, listen to me, you two sniffling nobodies. I told you earlier this evening that I am a scientist. Rosa went further. She told you that I experimented with a human body. That's very true. Now I shall experiment with you.
Right.
It would have been easier had you allowed us to creep into your room and end your lives painlessly, quickly. But no. You, in your clever wisdom, thought to outwit us by making us believe that there were two forms lying in the bed. Are you prepared, Cardo?
Yes, Professor.
But now, you walk right into our laboratory. Very convenient. Very convenient.
You let go of her.
Cato, take care of the gentleman.
No, you don't. Please. Let me out. Professor Santos, look at the door.
Lisa.
Charles, it cannot be.
Lisa, you're safe. Lisa, speak to me.
They cannot be walking.
Lisa, why do you walk so strangely, staring right at Professor Santos?
Get them away. They're not human. But they cannot be here walking. Cato, help me. She's coming for me.
I cannot help. The man thing has me in his grip.
No. No, get away from me. Cato, help.
I can do nothing, Professor.
She has my knife away from me.
She's killed Professor Santos. Thrust the knife through his heart.
No, she's coming for me.
Father, Lisa has killed them both.
Lisa. Lisa.
No, they're leaving. Lisa, Charles, don't leave us.
Mother. We're seeing something not of this world.
Father, don't let them leave us.
What? The professor's wife.
Release her.
Yes.
Lisa, Charles.
No.
Father, we must follow Lisa and Charles.
No. Don't you understand? Don't you understand?
Wait. What do you mean?
Those two. They're not really alive. Your daughter Lisa and the boy.
Not alive.
They're dead. They've been dead for 2 days. My husband, he used them for experiments. Human experiments.
What are you saying?
They were dead. I saw them die. Santos forced me to witness. They came back tonight to save you.
Lisa!
Their spirits?
Yes. Their spirits, walking about as though they were alive. Came back and saved you from a similar fate.
How horrible.
I saw them earlier tonight, walking on the stairs. I screamed with the horror of it.
Oh, then it was you who screamed, not Lisa.
Yes, it was I. Screaming at the horror of two dead souls taking shape. Coming back for revenge.
Thank you.
must return in their earthly forms to save the lives of their loved ones. Yes, and to mete out justice to the mad professor and his bloodthirsty servants. Turn on your lights. Turn them on. I'll be back. Pleasant dream.
This guy just cracks himself up.
Characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.
Yep. Yeah, the Hermit and the Crypt Keeper. Boy, they used to crack themselves up.
Well, you know, I was just thinking, that Hermit actually spent way too much time alone. He thinks everything he says is funny. I mean, he's almost as bad as me. He's almost as bad as me.
Maybe is it possible? Is it remotely possible that we could learn maybe one more thing?
Perhaps.
Okay.
Perhaps. We could try. We could try.
Oh, good God.
Gar, where are you?
Yes. Where are you? Erie House Radio proudly presents Garrulous, moral of the story number 3.
Yes, apologies. Big apologies to Gar. I guess the ultimate revenge is not in living well, but in coming back to haunt the living well.
Yes, it was all a bad dream.
It was a bad dream.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Yes, we hope for Gar's full recovery for tomorrow so he can be there live for Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul. They were overworking on his internet yesterday. Of course, there was a ton of droppage after they fixed what they thought they fixed, but they didn't. Anyway.
Yep.
Spent some good time with him. We were joking on the phone earlier today, and a great conversation. Just sorry he was not feeling up to being here with us tonight.
Nope. Hit him sometime in the late afternoon or early evening. But there you have it. We'll just wish that he recovers enough to do Horrible Horror Story. Here on the goal.
I think we've got time for a little bit of fun here.
Oh, I was going to say, before we get into what we're doing tomorrow night, we do have time for a wheel or music. What do you think?
Sure, you bet.
Give that wheel a tug, Dave.
Okay. Let me wait a second. Okay, I've walked up to the wheel. I'm reaching up to the very top so I can get a really good spin on this thing. And let's let her rip.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Let's introduce the old doctor himself, one of the best-known stars of Broadway and Hollywood, the inimitable Jackie Gleason.
Here we are at the Blair General Hospital Amphitheater. The stands are filled to capacity with cheering interns, and it looks like Dr. Kilmore is going to operate to a packed house. Right now, the odds on the patient's recovery are 4-1. Get your bets down before the betting window closes and Dr. Kilmore opens.
Programs, get your programs here. Without a program, you can't tell a thyroid from an adenoid. Get your programs.
May I have a program? That means, you know, that I wouldn't know. Get laughs or I'll know why.
Dr. Kilmore and Dr. Smith approach the operating table. The spectators quiet down. The moment is tense. Dr. Kilmore is ready.
Sponges.
Clamps.
Scissors.
Scalpel.
Sutures. Doctor, are you going to operate?
Now, how can I operate with my hands full of sponges, clamps, scissors?
Thank you.
by the way, where's the patient?
Here I am, Doc. Here I am under this kimono.
Oh, yes. Well, we're ready to start. Now, son, if you should want the nurse, just pull this cord.
Why?
She's tied to the other end. Now, what would you like to have taken out? Your appendix, your tonsils, or would you rather prefer our special surprise package?
I don't know. What do you take out best?
The nurses. But I have to operate a little differently here. All right, nurse. Scalpel.
Scalpel.
Suture.
Suture.
Dr. Scholl's corn pad.
Dr. Scholl's corn pad.
Dr. Scholl.
Now, just a minute, doctor. Do you know where to operate?
Why, certainly. I'm following this x-ray picture.
Oh, that's not an x-ray picture. That's a road map.
I wondered what his liver was doing in Pomona.
Well, excuse me, doctor, but what do you need now?
Get me the sulfanilamide.
Well, what do you want that for?
I don't want it. I just wanted to see if I could pronounce it. All right, son, lie down. I'm ready to operate.
I'm scared.
Don't be scared, old boy. The nurse will give you ether. Are you ready, nurse, with the cone?
Yes, doctor.
Thank you. Well, that was delicious. Nothing like an ice cream cone before an operation.
Have to deliver another anesthetic. Make it a chocolate one this time. Well, here goes.
Well, what are you going to take out first, doctor?
I don't know. Everything looks so good. All right, nurse, scalpel, gauze, forceps, cotton. There, I'm finished, Smith.
Kilmore, you've done it again.
Really?
Yes, you've sewed this patient to the operating table. Ah, but it was great work, Kilmore. Listen to those students applauding your work.
Oh, I cut him up better than that. What an ovation. What applause. I think I'll do an encore. Bring in that next patient. The one that comes here every year for an operation.
Oh, but doctor.
Wheel him in, I say.
Okay, here he is.
Good. Now, nurse, are you ready?
Yes, doctor.
All right. Scalpel.
Scalpel.
Wire.
Wire.
Teeth.
Teeth.
Scotch tape.
Scotch tape.
Hair.
Hair.
That's it. We're finished. There you are, Mr. Benny. You're good for another season.
Nice doctoring, Jackie Gleason.
The great one. The great one.
Even back then on the radio, he did a couple things. I'm looking for. I heard it years ago where they did a takeoff of The Killers, him and he and Jim Amici, which is Don Amici's younger brother, who had a career on radio as Jack Armstrong, All-American Boy. But he also did some announcing, much like Don Amici. Of course, Don Amici doing a lot of wonderful acting on radio and hosting on radio, and as well as, you know, even doing a few movies here and there.
Who knew?
But you know what we do know? We do have time for at least to hit the jukebox for one story, but since I did the wheel, you got to put up the wooden nickel.
Yep. Wait a minute, so here, check my pocket. Okay. Oh, I got one left. Hey, there we go. You just hit it on the side.
And he's mine, all mine. No word is high enough,
no praise to the sky enough.
So I had to raise all the words by one. He is much more than wonderful, so I add one. I call him tutorful.
That's one more than wonderful.
In fact, he's just three, three divine. He is my tutorful little noodle. And he comes from Timbuktu. He is my tutorful little noodle Lebanon. only to find me. It's higher praises that he deserves, so I sing his praises in higher words. He is my tutor, my little noodle Lavinette, and he comes from Timbuktu.
Does he come from California?
No, no.
Does he come from 11th Street?
No, no.
Does he come from Washington?
No, no. He comes from Timbuktu.
It's higher praises that he deserves, so we sing his praises in higher words.
He is my tutor, my little noodle Lavinette, and he comes from Timbuktu. And he comes from Timbuktu.
You may not find us on your TV, because in case you did not know, we're being brought to you by, brought to you by, brought to you by RADI.
Let's say hi to the one and only Margaret Whiting.
Species.
There's the volume button. Hey, Dale, I have an act of revenge you might appreciate.
Ooh, okay.
This one, again, from crack.com. I was in a group at a party and passed my cigarette to a buddy. The person who was left bummed it from him and so on through eight people. When the soggy butt came back around to me, I asked, hey, it's not a problem that I have herpes sore inside my lip, right? I didn't, but the group's moment of panic was delicious.
So, yeah, three tales tonight of revenge, two tomorrow night, right here on Erie House, starting at 6:30 Eastern. We got Inner Sanctum, The Dead Last, and The Green Hornet, paroled for revenge.
Ooh.
So two more tales of revenge as we get even with ourselves.
Yep. And you'll be able to tune in just before as we exit the airtime for Gar the Ghoul and Horrible Horror. On
that'll
that
be at
Twitch
eight.
Thing. On that Twitch thing
Twitch
at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, right after our show ends. And,
Oh, I want to welcome D. Miller, who's a regular there at Horrible Horror. Thanks for tuning in for the show tonight, D. Miller. Come right back for us another time.
Yeah, and since you're a famous Monsters fan, I'll tell you a brief story. We had a big convention called Ghoulari Fest. I ran for years and years here in Cleveland. Still ran a horror host here, very well known in the 60s. And the first one was a big extravaganza. They got all kinds of guests, all the horror hosts that ever had shows here in Cleveland, plus some others. I can't remember some of the others, but Forrest J. Ackerman came there. And I was a little shy about meeting him. But the weirdest thing, my wife, who's not a big horror fan, all right, but she's like a geezer magnet. Men older than her are just drawn to her. They're fascinated by her. And sure enough, Forrest saw us over there. We're pushing a stroller. My son was a baby at the time. And he beckons my wife with a finger, beckons to come on over. And he goes, here, I want to show you something. and he was showing her Karloff's mummy ring on one hand, and on the other he had Bela Lugosi's Dracula ring. And she just got a chill out of that. So, needless to say, I did too. And I at least had the opportunity to thank him for his magazine, which I told him probably kept me out of doing really dumb, stupid kid stuff. And I was busy reading monster magazines and comic books. So there.
Great story. Great story. But,
not
too much more time. I hope everybody will join us again tomorrow night at 6:30. Because it is just about time to open up that door that we close at the end of the night here.
Yeah, that's true.
Just about.
It's
coming
time.
Right up.
But get ready for Halloween. It's going to be at least four nights in a row of Halloween stuff. That'll be the weekend before Halloween, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
And
Sunday.
That's Sunday. With another different version of War of the Worlds coming at us this year.
Yep. Dave did it again. He came up with another great version of War of the Worlds. To keep our tradition, every Oct the 30th in commemoration of the original Orson Welles broadcast. Well, thanks again to D. Miller, Fogsbane, and good old Bob for joining us live right here on Erie House Radio. See us tomorrow.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Good enough. They missed the slam of the door, but whatever.
That's okay. Unless you're listening in the archive, it was perfect. Yes.
Yes, like we always are in the archive. But No, I never, I mean, I guess when I was really young, I wanted to get even and fantasized about it, but it's not something I would do. It just doesn't seem like it would feel rewarding, because then once you did that, then what?
Yeah, that's true. And will it be enough to satisfy her where you have to take another step or something? No, it's not worth the energy, I don't think.
Nah, I mean, a small revenge, like a snappy retort, perhaps, but that's maybe about as far as I would go.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. But yeah. I've never been a victim of any kind of an extreme act. I don't know. Maybe I'd snap if somebody hurt my family or my pets. I might well snap.
Yeah. Yeah, you might, and then you'd want revenge all the worse, that kind of a thing, but...
Yeah.
Hopefully that's not something that we ever. And you know, some people have a pretty low threshold of what they want to get revenge for. Sometimes, you know, it's just not truly worth the energy. You know, I guess somebody was saying something to me. I think I talked to my son and I said, "Look, Bobby, I just don't want to waste my energy on that. I got enough things to do. I don't mind doing." But I'm not wasting my energy on just years and years. I know people that have held grudges for years. So, man, that's too much work. I got better things to do.
Don't I know it? But anyway. Whatever.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
Anymore. Things are what they are. Gee, we got good stuff coming up, Dave. I got a little extra time, so I'll be putting together more of the Halloween package.
Yep, I got that. I left that all open for you, so we'll.
Yep.
The only one that might actually could pencil in right now is War of the Worlds. We'll need a full 2 hours for that one, Dale, because of the way that one came out. You can't do it in 90, so we have to have the 2 hours for that night.
I don't know. You want to do the same start time, 6:30 every night?
Sure.
Good. That seems to work out for
still
us old guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, we can be in bed before it's too late. Yeah. Wednesday night is the only night I have problem with. So.
Okay, well, I don't think we're doing it Wednesday. So.
Oh, okay. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That would be great because Wednesday is just it's a split shift I have for work. So.
I think we'll just do 4 this year. That sounds good.
Yeah. Especially since at least one, if not more, will be 2-hour shows. So.
Yes.
So there'll be plenty. Nobody gets ripped off at Erie House Radio. Everybody gets their money's worth.
Everybody gets ripped off at Erie House Radio.
I say everybody gets their money's worth since they don't pay anything for it. Everybody gets their money's worth.
They should still get a refund. And those to me. Jeez.
And me.
Well, that's nothing wrong with that, but Well, Brother Gar, if you're listening in the archive or something like that, you just get well, will you?
Yes, please. Please. And it looks like D. Miller may be joining us again on other nights. I think he kind of came in late, but looks like he's planning on coming back again.
We roped in another one, I hope.
Yep, and it's like good old Bob. That was one of Gar's guys. Is there every week, is good old Bob. And so Gar would have really liked to have been here tonight to see D. Miller here. So.
Ah, so he's a denizen of the Twitches, eh?
He is a denizen of the Twitches.
Oh, cool. Good.
And them are horrible horrors. He's there every night that I show up there. And Foggs is a regular there now also. He came from us and went to Gar, and the other two came from Gar and came to us. So, you know, we'll take them however we can get them.
That's right. We'll borrow them, steal them, rent them, whatever we got to do.
Yep. Bribe them.
Bribes.
Blackmail them, whatever it takes.
Yep.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah. We're not proud.
We're not proud, no.
We're not fussy.
Or very talented for that matter. But, you know.
That's just not even necessary. This is the internet, damn it.
Oh, my.
Maybe it takes a bit of narcissism to to want to get revenge. You know what I mean? Because you can't stand the thought of being wrong or incorrect or one-upped or whatever the case may be, the cause or need for revenge. The people that have a low threshold, you know?
I just don't really understand that myself. You know what? I think when I was younger and I was more of a hothead, which I was.
Everybody
something
is,
I had to learn.
When you're younger.
I had to learn to control myself, as most people do, and it just isn't worth it.
Yeah, I think the very definition of maturity is self-control, your ability to control yourself against your impulses or urges.
Then
or,
I don't,
you know what I mean?
Then I don't know any mature people.
That's right. Damn right.
Us included. Us
and
included.
I was going to say, that starts right here, doesn't it?
Immaturity starts at home. That's right.
Even with my mixed feelings for the Browns, my distaste for the Steelers made yesterday night a very enjoyable.
Yeah. And it made me wonder, and it could be, I did watch it, and it did make me wonder, are the Browns almost as good as they looked, or do the Steelers really, really suck without Ben Roethlisberger? Good. That's the question of the week.
Honestly, I think their defense was not as threatening as they have been in the past, the Steelers.
Well, their best defensive guy is out. Yeah, their best defensive guy is out, and maybe the rest of them are feeling it, stepping up. They're kind of feeling, oh, we don't have our best guy. I don't think we can win tonight. Oh,
yeah, some guys go in like that. I hope not, but they're making a lot of money. Get out there and play, goddammit.
You know, here's the thing. I don't think there's anyone more superstitious than athletes. And if they feel
certainly
it's
in baseball,
kind of sign.
Certainly in
Yeah. Baseball. I remember when Charles Nagy went out and pitched a good game, but just before that game, he ate a whole cheese pizza. And so, like, for the next five starts, he ate a whole cheese pizza before he went out to pitch. I think I'd be barfing, but good for him.
I'd be carb coma nowadays. I'll be like, I don't feel like pitching. I feel like napping.
Yeah, give me a nap, yeah. Might as well have
like
a
napping.
Turkey sandwich, yeah. Yep.
So good times. Getting even,
well,
you know, I joked about it earlier, but getting even should be a fun thing, you know, like you do me a solid, I do you a solid, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Kind of what they did with Practical Jokes on MASH. If you ever watch much of MASH, they were always trying to practical joke each other. And
that's great stuff.
Some of those were just so good. And they were practical jokes that nobody got hurt, but it was, and then they had to get even for that. Then they had to get even for that, you know, and so it was, but nobody got hurt, you know?
Yeah, and it's intended to be all in good fun, and if all parties understand that, then it's good time. That could be a good creative release.
Yep. That's why I kind of enjoyed it when Frank left and they brought in David Ogden Stiers to play Charleston Emerson Winchester III, because Charles could fight back. Frank couldn't.
No, he was
Charles
an idiot.
Could fight back, and that's what made it even more fun.
Yeah, because at least he had a brain. He was kind of weird.
He did.
But he had a brain.
Yeah.
His
he
character
was upper crusty,
could fight
but,
back.
He was upper crusty, but he could fight back, yeah.
Yeah, he had a bit of a wit at times. He had a bit of a wit at times.
And yet, there are times it showed through where he deeply cared about certain things. So.
Yep.
I have a wonderful show. Wonderful show. Anyway.
That last one is just, epic.
Yeah.
The last match.
Yeah, it was.
That was an incredible show. Good writers. Good actors.
Yeah, the whole all the way around.
Yep. Well, let's wrap it up then. We don't have CW here for her normal appointed duties.
Right. Well, she's appointed duties on Saturday night. For Friday night, we'll just have to turn off the house lights, bring on the three spotlights, and bring on the one and only Mr. Jimmy Durante.
God, we got to do all the work tonight.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night.
Good night.
What more
is
this say but good night?
How many times
have you
said good night here?
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
He was stupid.
It's horrible what we say. That's inconceivable.
Think-a-do.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night
already.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
And now, folks, it's time to say good night. We sincerely appreciate your patronage.
Good night, Jay.
And hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.
How about tomorrow?
That's fine.